This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervy.
Wow, that cut out really quickly. Boy, I wasn't used to that. I usually have a little extra time to get prepared before the intro stops because for the last 6.5 years, they've introduced Carrie Kasem as my co-host, and all of a sudden it's just Alan Gervy and you're on. I wanted to hear that bit about Carrie Kasem, but KBC was doing a lot of work this week to make sure that they edited out Carrie. For those of you who missed last week's show, Carrie is moving on. She's probably going to be in Florida out of here. A lot of people leaving California, but she's going to be in Florida on new endeavors. And we were very sad to see her go. And if you missed last week's show, check out Gervy's Law so you could see the podcast or at least listen to it and hear about all the fun that we had last week. So we are moving on. And I'm supposed to do that corny intro that I've been doing for 7 years. First time in 7 years I didn't do it. So let me just do it. Are you ready for this? Well, how does it go? Wayman, I forget. After 7 years, I can't even remember. Something about me being the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, Wynn. And today I'm supposed to be the managing partner of your life. I don't think I can manage anyone's life. But I am really happy because we have a guest co-host. Our first guest co-host since Carrie left the show is Deb Carson, and Deb has been on our show on Gervy's Law. She's been on the show a couple times, and she is an award-winning radio and TV personality. Finally, the show has an award-winning radio, TV, and personality. Sorry, Gary. She's a national anchor for Fox Sports, works on shows like Dan Patrick's Show, The Herd with Colin Cowherd, Rich Eisen Show. She anchors national and LA sports reports. She was formerly the co-host with Stephen A. Smith on the Stephen A. Smith Show. She's appeared in a lot of TV shows and movies, Lethal Weapon, Desperate Housewives, Evan Almighty, Dexter, and a host of others. The host with the most, Deb, welcome back to Gervy's Law.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's an honor to be here, and I love Carrie. I knew Carrie, you know, from back in the Nikki Six days, and I was sad to hear she was leaving, but I'm honored to be here filling in until you find your new partner in crime.
You know, I don't know what we're going to do, whether we find a partner in crime or we just have some guest hosts, but we'll see. Stay tuned. It's funny because you talk about Nikki Six. You don't look like that rocker. You were working down the hall from the Nikki Six show.
Yeah, their studio is right across the hall from my studio, my Fox Sports Radio anchor studio. So there were always interesting people coming in and out, and you'd see people like Stevie Nicks walk by and you know, other legendary rock stars. Wow. And musicians. But I got to know Carrie very well because she was hosting there. And I've been at Fox Sports Radio for 14 years now. So there have been a lot of changes, but I miss seeing her on a regular basis. I think the Sixth Sense, that's over, I believe.
I think it is. I know it went on after Carrie.
Right.
Because Carrie was like cursing the new person who took over for her for many years.
Uh-oh.
But, yeah, I think that ended. I don't know what Nikki Six is doing, but, you know, anyway, I'm just happy that you have a smile on your face because you might not have, and I know there was some discouraging news in the Dallas Cowboys game, but for those of you who don't know, Deb is a huge Cowboys fan, and I was really afraid. I was driving into the studio today, and I was really fearful that the Cowboys were going to lose, and we were going to have a very angry Deb Carson with us, but she's smiling even though it looked like a gruesome injury to Dak Prescott today.
Yeah, it did look bad. Yes, I almost, as a joke, texted and said, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it in, Alan. But no, it's I wish him all the best. He seems like such an amazing young man. He's been through so much, the loss of his mom, the loss of his brother this year. Yeah. He's a quality I hate to say kid because he's, you know, a 20-something-year-old man.
Look like a kid, so.
You're a very sweet man. Thank you very much. But yeah, exactly. Just, what was it, about 7 minutes ago, Dallas kicked the field goal to win. It was pins and needles. When I got out of the car, there was a minute left on the clock, so.
It was quite a day, actually, in the NFL, and we're not going to talk about the NFL too much. We're spending a few minutes talking to Deb before we get to our guests. And by the way, it is a legal show, and we have some great guests. I'll mention them right now. We have David Latt coming on after the break, and David is the founding editor of Above the Law, an award-winning website for a lot of lawyers and legal people go to visit every month, and he's going to talk about his bout with COVID. Many of you may have seen in the social media how he was fighting for his life on a ventilator. So we're going to talk to David after the break. And then later in the show, we're going to talk to Eitan Goldman, who is a trial lawyer at Zuckerman and Spader. And he's going to talk about an NFL lawsuit that has just recently been brought on for discrimination based on the concussion settlements, discrimination against the black players. So that's really interesting. Up Deb's alley, because she knows a whole lot about sports. I've known Deb for quite a while. Our kids I went to preschool together, so I know that she is very familiar with the NFL and all other sports. And by the way, I was going to mention, because there's some synergy here, there was quite a day today by a Canadian. I always bring up Canadians because Chase Claypool had 4 touchdowns, a rookie for the Steelers, 4 touchdowns from Abbotsford, BC. And why do I bring up Chase Claypool?
Well, my daughter is Chase and you're Canadian, right?
That's right. I you know, how often do I get to say Chase?
Exactly. Yeah. Not often. Chase Daniel used to some play, Chase Utley, but that's
Chase Claypool today. And Chase is beautiful. I'm not talking about Chase Claypool. I'm talking about your daughter, Chase. And I'm glad to hear we talked before the show. She's doing really well, at least for now, in the remote learning.
She is.
As all our kids are suffering, but it's good to hear that she's hanging in there. And today is a special day. I really want to talk about this because it's really important. What a lot of people don't realize who listen to Fox Sports and know Deb Carson, that she really does a lot of wonderful work for a lot of wonderful charities. And I think one of them that she's put so much attention in on behalf of her father, her late father, would be so proud of her. And today is his birthday.
Yes, exactly. In fact, 5 years ago today, we were celebrating with him, and that was the last birthday we had the fortune to celebrate with him. But he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and passed away 5 months later. And the reason that it's such a brutal disease and the diagnosis is so terrifying is because generally by the time a patient's diagnosed, they're already into stage 3 or stage 4, because there aren't really a lot of symptoms that you have until it progresses that far. So unfortunately, his was already stage 4, but 1 month out of the year, I do my 30 days of purple for a purpose. And I'm, you know, everybody who follows my social media sees, I try to come up with new things every year just because, you know, I don't want it to be so somber all the time, but just trying to raise awareness of it, because truly, until I had my father be diagnosed, I didn't know as much about it. I knew it was one of the bad cancers, but I had no idea how pervasive it was. I mean, we just lost Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She had a phenomenally long survival with the disease. You know, she had had a couple of bouts with it. But, you know, there are so many people, not just famous people. Obviously, Alex Trebek is surviving at this point and doing really, really well from what I understand. But generally, the 5-year survival rate is less than 10%.
Yeah. Tell us about the Hirschberg Foundation, because I know you've been involved in a lot raising money for the Hirschberg Foundation for pancreatic research.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that I chose the Hirschberg Foundation. When my dad passed away, we were trying to find a way to honor him. And to me, finding an early detection method is the most important thing as far as pancreatic cancer goes, because if somebody is diagnosed early, they've got a fighting shot against this thing.
Yeah.
So Hirschberg Foundation really does focus a lot of their funds on research grants, on finding medical personnel across the country who have found like little keys and they just need another grant to try to progress to the next level. And honestly, any research they do on pancreatic cancer, whether it leads at this point to a cure or an early detection method, it really is beneficial for all cancers, because you might be researching pancreatic cancer, and oh, you find something that might assist ovarian cancer or breast cancer or prostate cancer. So our medical research is so key across the world. But they really also, they have pulled together, they've built basically a database for researchers across the world so that people can enter what they found. And other researchers can kind of search and see if there's any synergy they can find with that other researcher and find the next step in progressing toward a cure or an early detection method.
Now, what I'm looking at, LA Cancer Challenge, it's a little coloring page that Deb was nice enough to give to for me so I can give to Hudson and Harper so they can color. And tell us about the LA Cancer Challenge, Kids Can Cure.
Well, LA Cancer Challenge is generally every October Halloween weekend at UCLA, but obviously with our world situation the way it is right now, we're doing a virtual LA Cancer Challenge. But as I said, the Purple for a Purpose campaign that I do to try to raise awareness, sometimes I had posted, you know, 30 pictures of my dad or 30 things that were purple. But this year, Hirschberg on their site had this cute little cartoon for the kids to color. And generally, they have a big setup for the kids. They've got a bounce house and, you know, entertainment for the kids while the parents are participating. So I thought, you know what? Why not have kids of friends that I know or followers, you know, of Fox Sports Radio, why not have them, the kids, color a page? And every day of the 30 days, I've been posting a child's picture, you know, generally first name only, because I don't want to put a kid's last name out there. But I will make a donation in their name for our LA Cancer Challenge team, which is hashtag Crush Cancer. And I want kids to understand that even though they're kids, they can bring awareness to cancer. They can have a positive effect on the world. Yeah, as early
it's, it's a wonderful, wonderful lesson. We got to take a break. Before we do, quickly give everyone your social media information so that if people want to get involved or donate, what's the best way to do it?
Okay. Well, my accounts are twitter.com/Deb Carson, instagram.com/official Deb Carson. Or if you want to just go directly to our hashtag Crush Cancer page, it's support.pancreatic.org/go-to/D Carson.
D Carson. If you find Deb Carson, you're going to find out a lot of the wonderful things that she is doing for others. And I take my hat off to you. And thanks for doing it. We are going to speak to David Latt after the break. You don't want to miss it. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time. I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger.
Pretty upbeat. Yeah, David Latt is an upbeat guy, so we get a tease with a little bit of upbeat music. It's Alan Gervie right here with Deb Carson. Carrie Kasem. She's history, Deb, and I'm so happy that you're here.
Well, thank you. I'm going to argue that she's not history, but she is history on the show. But yeah, absolutely, and I'm honored to be here. It's
Carrie
always
and
great
I
to
are
see
great
you.
Friends. Yeah, so no, she laughs that we've laughed, and it's so nice to have you. I don't want to be alone. I just it's tough being alone. I want to talk about David Latt, because he is really something special. The founding editor of Above the Law, and for those of you who are not legal nerds like he is, it's an award-winning website. It reaches over a million people every month. He's a writer, speaker, and a legal recruiter at Lateral Link, managing director of the New York office, which is, there's 14 offices worldwide. He is a two-time New York marathoner, and he's just getting back into a little bit of running and jogging. We're going to hear about that. His book is Supreme Ambitions, a novel from 2014, very well reviewed. We can talk about that as well. He previously worked as a federal prosecutor, a litigation associate. He was clerking at the U.S. Court of Appeal in the Ninth Circuit. Been a writer in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, amongst other publications. Harvard, Yale is in his past. And David just had a really tough time with COVID-19. David, we're so happy to have you here on Gervie's Law.
Alan, Deb, thanks for having me.
It's really good to have you, and I know you've been through so much. Tell us what you've learned over the last 6 months, because I'm sure you didn't expect it at all.
No, definitely not. I think I learned that COVID is in many ways a lot more frightening than many people realize. In early February, I was hearing news reports and that, you know, for many people, it might be like a full case of the cold or the flu. And it is true that many people either don't have very severe symptoms or are even asymptomatic, meaning they have no symptoms. And I figured I would be one of those folks. And it turned out I wasn't. I got very sick with COVID in early March, and I wound up spending about 2.5 weeks in the hospital, including almost a week on a ventilator.
David, how early on did you know that it was COVID? Because, you know, if you have those symptoms, how quickly did it turn into something that was really terrifying?
So it's interesting, Deb. When I first started to get sick, I started to feel fatigued and I had a fever. But this was early March, and there were maybe 50 confirmed cases of COVID in New York City, of a city of 8.5 million people. So my husband and I thought, could this be COVID? No, this can't be COVID. And I called my primary care doctor, and they basically diagnosed me over the phone. And they said, well, it sounds like you have a case of the flu that turned into bronchitis. Here's some antibiotics and some cough syrup. But as the days went on and I didn't get better with that medication, and then my breathing started to get very labored and I was having a hard time breathing, then I figured this is probably COVID.
Wow. But you're such a young guy. You're a marathoner. You're in fit shape. I mean, you seem to be one of the people on paper, at least, that would not have had such a severe case of COVID.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that people should be aware of regarding this disease. You don't necessarily know how hard it's going to hit you. Now, in my case, I did have childhood asthma, which was very well managed for me as an adult. It had been years since my last asthma attack. I would just take an inhaler before I would exercise, and that was pretty much about it. But perhaps that may be more susceptible. I'm not sure. But otherwise, I was in great shape. I was not overweight. I had no underlying conditions, no diabetes, no hypertension. All my indicators of my physicals were normal. I was in my, mid to early 40s at the time, runner, would go to the gym multiple times a week. So I was really floored at how hard it hit me.
Do you think that your lifestyle at all played a part in that? I mean, a really busy guy. I imagine you didn't sleep a whole lot with all of the ventures that you had going, writing and of course, the legal recruiting, everything else above the law. Does that play any part in it? Did you feel you were worn down when it all hit you?
Well, I think I was a little bit tired, which is why at first when I started to feel fatigued, I thought, oh, this can't be COVID. I just must be a little bit tired. But I think it might be maybe my lifestyle contributed in another way. Look, I don't know where exactly I got it, but I was a very active New Yorker. I was going out a lot. I was not quarantining at home in early March. And it probably is how I got it, because I wasn't being particularly cautious back then.
You know, what's interesting, I'm listening to your voice, and I listened to the great interview that you did for the NBC Today show a little while back with Savannah Guthrie. And you really sound a lot better. Your voice sounds really much stronger. Are you finding the day after day now that you're getting back to a place where you feel you're healthy, or are you still a little cautious?
So I feel very lucky, Alan, because you're reading in the news now about a lot of people who had COVID and even weeks or months later have heart problems, kidney problems, blood clotting problems, brain fog. For me, I'm feeling a lot better. I still am rather out of shape. I can't jog more than 1 mile, which, of course, is a far cry from running a marathon. My lungs still have some scarring, as the CT scan showed when I went to my pulmonologist in September. But on the whole, I can't really complain, because I do feel very mentally acute right now. I don't feel particularly fatigued. I don't have any heart or kidney issues. So I'm starting to get back better. And as you mentioned, my voice is definitely getting better. When I gave that interview to the Today Show with Savannah, my voice was very hoarse because the ventilator damages your vocal cords. And now my voice, these months later, is basically back to normal. So even though I have some lingering effects, I feel very fortunate.
Well, David, obviously the most important thing is for you to stay healthy. But I'm just curious, I have never run a marathon, but the people I know who have are so competitive against themselves. Do you think that you'll ever get back to that point, or do you not even, you're just happy to be here? You just, you don't even care whether you get back to that 26 mile race.
More the latter. I think my marathoning days may be behind me. And full disclosure, it had been a long time since I'd run a marathon when I got sick this past March. And look, I would still run, 5-6 miles at a decent pace without a problem. But my long distance running days were already kind of behind me. But for me now, I recently ran a virtual race with the New York Road Runners, where you use an app that has GPS to essentially track the accuracy of your run. It was a 1 mile race, and I had to actually train to run 1 mile. I did a quarter mile, I did a half mile, I did 3/4 of a mile. I had to build up to that over the course of weeks because I was so out of shape and my lungs are not what they once were. So the running the 1 mile felt like running the 26 miles.
Well, it is an accomplishment. And when you think back of when you started to improve, when you were getting back into exercise, did you look back and were you privy to what was going on? For instance, your husband, Zach Shemtov, has been so involved with social media. A lot of us, and I was following your story, so many people were, not only the community in Above the Law, but a lot of others. And you have a 2-year-old son, it's Harlan, right? My nephew's name is Harlan, by the way.
That's a great name.
It is a great name, and he's always loved it because it's rather unique, so people remember it. But when you look back, how did it feel to see what kind of love was being shared with not only Zach, but everyone in the community over your illness?
That was really the most amazing part of this. I just felt so embraced and supported throughout all of this. I was sharing my journey on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, even LinkedIn, just to kind of let people know what it's like to have this disease and what it's like to be treated for it and what the recovery is like. And I initially just did that thinking, well, maybe this will be of use to people. But it was of use to me because I just got so much support, prayers, good thoughts from family, friends, total strangers here and around the world. And that just really helped me and my family make it through that terrible experience.
We're going to take a quick break. After we come back, David, we want to talk a little bit about what's going on now. Thankfully, you're doing better. You're back at work, you're writing, and you're doing the legal recruiting. I want to ask you about how that's going, because as a lawyer, we always think about our profession. And I know it's been tough. Big Law has transformed in a lot of ways, and how you've been handling that as a legal recruiter, because there really is a new world out there, and it affects so many people and so many businesses, law firms, and others. So we want to talk about that, and I know you're the person to talk to since you've got your hand on the pulse. So we'll do that in a minute. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. I'm Alan Gervie. She's Deb Carson. We're talking to David Latt. What an amazing, amazing story. David is a founding editor of Above the Law. And by the way, David, what's your role with Above the Law now? I know you had a lot to do with it in the past, but you're spending a lot of time with recruiting these days, Lateral Link.
Yes, that's right. I am now just a contributor. So I write a column for Above the Law every other week on Tuesdays. But I'm no longer involved in editing or managing the site. My very capable former colleagues are at the helm.
How proud are you of Above the Law and how they supported you through your COVID fight?
Oh, I'm very proud of the site and very grateful to my colleagues and writers and editors who really supported me through this. And have also tried to draw attention to a lot of the serious issues surrounding COVID and how it's dealt with.
You know, Deb was talking to me during the break, and she said, is it okay if I ask David? And I said, you know what? David's an open book. Not that I know you personally, but I feel you are. So she has a question for you, and I think you can handle it.
Well, I had read an interview about your situation, and when you were actually about to be intubated and go under, I read, and this horrified me, that you were actually asked as you're about to go under, are you willing to be an organ donor, and whether or not you wanted to be resuscitated. Is that true?
Yes, that's my that is definitely my recollection. I understood why they were asking it, and I pretty much said yes to everything. My driver's license says I'm willing to be an organ donor. Mm-hmm. I certainly did want to be resuscitated if that was necessary. And different people have different choices about these types of treatments. I think people, I've certainly heard from older folks or people who have other conditions who would say, you know what, I don't want to have any extraordinary measures performed on me. But for me, as Alan mentioned, I have a young son. I definitely want it to be around.
Of course. But I think a lot of us think about the physical things that you're going through when you're in ICU or being intubated. I don't think people realize the emotional and the horrifying, potentially, things that you're dealing with as well.
So. Yeah, absolutely. It's terrifying. I mean, I was just I'm Catholic. I was just praying the Hail Mary over and over again as they were getting me ready to be intubated, which is where they put that breathing tube in your mouth and down your throat. And luckily, you're given anesthesia, so you're not really awake for this. Although, unfortunately, for some people, they actually do remember some of that experience. Again, I'm very lucky. I don't remember any of that.
You know, you really hit home when you talked about, your 2-year-old son. Deb and I, we both have kids who are under 8 years old. Mm. I have two and she has one. So it does really weigh on you. And I'm sure, you know, it was very emotional to think about your son, your family. And for anyone, obviously, it's a lot. And it's such a far cry from when you wrote Supreme Ambitions, when you're talking about it. And that book, by the way, was very well received. I was looking at one of the reviews and it was interesting. It says, this was a page turner, excellent plot with lots of very realistic details. I really felt for the main character, Audrey, and her struggles. The author did a great job of portraying what an elite judicial clerkship is like, especially the way the clerks often try on the ethics and priorities of their judge while on the way to figuring out what their own ethics and priorities are. You were in a completely different world of ethics and priorities dealing with this, weren't you?
Yes, absolutely. And we just celebrated Harlan's 3rd birthday this past weekend, and I just couldn't help but think, wow, I'm so glad I'm around for this. I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit in the last few minutes that we have with you, David, about the legal business, Lateral Link. You've been very successful as a recruiter with Lateral Link. Tell us about how COVID pandemic has impacted your new line of work, so to speak. Not really new, but your line of work now.
Yeah, it's relatively new. I guess I've been doing it for more than a year, but it's been interesting. I think I've been pleasantly surprised, as have many of us, by how well the legal job market has stood up during this period. And lawyers are lucky. I mean, as you know, Alan, we don't have to leave our homes necessarily to get our work done. We can talk to our clients over the phone. We can type our documents at home. We're very lucky compared to a lot of essential workers who have to be out there potentially exposing themselves and their families to this deadly virus. So law firms and in-house legal departments, which are the clients we work for at Lateral Link, they have continued to hire. Now, the interviews have to be done over Zoom or a similar video service. Even the onboarding when people get hired has to be done remotely. I have a candidate who started at his new firm in March, and he has yet to set foot in the physical offices. But look, it's working. He's enjoying the firm. They're loving his work. So things continue, and we're very fortunate that we can do our work from the comfort of our homes.
Well, I'm not an attorney, but I'm just curious. Are there any emerging areas within the law field that you're seeing emerging either out of COVID or out of any of the other social issues that are going on?
Yes, Deb, there are definitely quite a number. One thing that's very interesting is there's going to be a lot of white-collar criminal defense work related to some of the relief programs that were set up by the government, which unfortunately, even though they've been essential for so many Americans, have been the victims of fraud. So people are going to need lawyers if they allegedly were abusing those programs. So that's one area. Another area where you're already seeing activity is litigation over insurance, like business interruption insurance. My business had to close for months because of COVID and lockdown. Can I get money from my insurer? So that has been a very busy area. There have been a lot of other areas like capital markets, raising money for companies through stock and bonds. Again, companies need money to ride out this pandemic. And so that area has been surprisingly busy. And, of course, sadly, bankruptcy, or maybe not sadly for them, bankruptcy has been booming.
Right. Sadly for those suffering from it. Quickly, you only have a minute. Talk a little bit about the Bridge program, because it's pretty interesting and it's consistent with what you're talking about now.
Yes. Yeah, so this was something that we set up at Lateral Link to help lawyers who have either, you know, lost their jobs or have been furloughed, to help connect them with employers who need temporary help during this time. And it's been a big success, and it's been able to help both lawyers and companies get through this challenging period. So I think during this period of just national difficulty, we all have to try to be innovative and think of new ways to help each other.
Yeah, well, we wish you all the best with that. It's so great to hear your voice being as strong as it is, and I'm sure everyone wishes you well. You're way on the way back to where you were, and that's a credit to you. We appreciate David Latt. We appreciate you being with us today on Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much, Alan, Deb. It was great chatting with you.
Thank you.
Have a great evening. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Eitan Goldman. You're going to want to hear about this NFL lawsuit. It's very, very disturbing. And we have it right here on Gervie's Law. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
It's funny, Deb, when I listen to those bumpers and they say, call Alan Gervie. I'm so used to, for the last 7 years, call Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem. And they really did a good job of butchering our old our ads and everything. And I look around and I see the billboards and Kerry's picture is taken out and it's just me. So, anyway.
Did they fill in the other side, or is it just like a blank?
It's a blank. It's a question mark on the other side.
And by the way, kudos to the bumper music in honor of Eddie Van Halen this week.
Yeah,
Great job.
See, that's what Deb knows. She knows. She talked about Nikki Six before. Now she's talking about Eddie Van Halen.
It's my era.
I was talking to my friend who was the urologist of Eddie Van Halen, and his heart was just broken. He was saying that he was the nicest man. I didn't get into any of the the medical stuff, but he did say that great, great guy, great person, other than being obviously an amazing guitarist. A lot of stuff going on, I'll tell you. And you know, keeping with the theme, David Latt was at Yale Law School, our next guest from Yale Law School. So there's a theme. We're going to talk about the NFL. I'm watching the Vikings-Seattle game right now because I'm a huge Viking fan. Good opening drive there. So we're going to keep on that NFL theme.
All right.
And I want to introduce to everyone now Eitan Goldman. He is a partner at Zuckerman Spader, and he's got 9 years behind him as a federal prosecutor. His practice now, private practice, focuses on white-collar crimes and complex commercial litigation. He's the former director of the Division of Enforcement for the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He was the youngest member of the team that prosecuted Oklahoma bombing suspects Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. He clerked for Justice Aharon Barak at the Supreme Court of Israel. He represented FBI agent Peter Strzok as his attorney, which was in the news a lot, and again, maybe come up again moving forward at the election or afterward. And now there's a new lawsuit involving the NFL. And Deb, who's been doing, what, Fox Sports for 14 years?
14 years, yeah.
So you know all about it. Kevin Henry, who played for the Steelers, I remember him, and Jay Davenport, who played for the dreaded Packers and the Colts and the Steelers. Talk about this NFL lawsuit. It's concussion settlements discriminating against blacks. Eitan Goldman, welcome to Gervie's Law. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Alan. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Eitan.
Hi. So tell us about this, because, you know, Deb and I were talking before. We're both huge fans, and it just seems so unfair when you hear the particulars of what's going on with the NFL concussion settlements, which is a billion-dollar concussion settlement from 2013, of which about $720 million have already been paid out to retired players for neurocognitive problems.
Right. So there were a whole bunch of cases filed against the NFL for concussions, and some of the allegations were that the NFL knew about how damaging it was to players' brains to play. And you know, there was that movie with Will Smith that talked about it. And then there was a settlement in 2015. And there are a bunch of different diagnoses that former players can get in order to be entitled to awards. And two of them are moderate dementia and severe dementia. And in order to be entitled to those awards, you have to show that your cognitive ability has deteriorated, right? That you're not kind of mentally right. The same person that you were when you started playing in the NFL.
Sure.
So that's fine, but the procedures that players have to go through in order to get certified that they have this dementia in order to be entitled to award, they're the same testing for African-American and white former players, but if you're black, they change the scores. So you can have two players have the exact same background, same education, same college, same grades, same age, same length of time in the NFL. And if they're white, after the tests show dementia, the NFL says to them, oh, you have dementia. And if they're black, they take the test, get the exact same score, and the NFL says to them, oh, you're black.
What is the justification for that? That's crazy. I mean, I had never heard the term race norming before, and the use of racial classification. What does your race have to do with whether you've become less? You know, you started with a higher baseline or a lower baseline. If if you have dementia, you have dementia, and anybody who's watched football I've watched it for decades now, but I mean, of course you're going to have some damage to your brain, especially if you're, you know, a lineman or you're taking a lot of hits like a lot of the receivers are. How is the justification for the different racial classifications? What is the justification? I have no idea how they can possibly explain this.
The purported justification is that, you know, they're trying to find the delta, right? They're trying to find the difference between what you were and what you are.
Right.
And they are estimating what you were. They're trying to kind of guess or make educated guesses. And they use the race norming to adjust your score because they say, well, if you're African-American, there's, you know, in some neuropsychological diagnoses, they use race norming so that they don't overdiagnose black folks with dementia. And they say, well, if you're African-American, then we want to compare you to this particular universe of African-Americans. It's from a experiments done or clinical studies done like 30 years ago in San Diego. And there's been a lot of criticism of it. But they say, and the difference is really enormous. In Nodge's case, you know, his score was a 29. That was his kind of unvarnished, unnormed score. But because he's African-American, they added 10 points to it, so he's 39. And 39 is a lot closer to 50, which is kind of the median, than 29 is. So,
and was Naja, it, I just want to say, was it just because he's African-American that they add that? They don't look at individuals? Because, you know, a lot of people obviously understand that just because you are of a race or you are of a gender doesn't mean you're going to have whatever someone else of that race or that gender may have pre-existing.
Right. No, I mean, you know, we're talking about players who on all other demographic factors are the same, you know, same age, same gender. I mean, everybody's a male, you know, everybody's had some college. And the distinguishing factor here is African-American and Caucasian. And it is, I mean, you know, Deb, you talked about some of the damage that these people sustained. I mean, you listen to them, and it really is heartbreaking. I mean, Naja got more than 10 concussions. He once was hit so hard that it fractured his eyeball socket.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, you talk to these guys, you talk to Kevin, you talk to Naja, and they really are debilitated. I mean, it's very hard for them to function just to do the activities of daily living. I mean, there's no question that these guys have dementia.
So are they are they getting less of a settlement, or they're just not getting a settlement at all?
No, they're getting completely shut out.
Wow.
I mean, the threshold you have to meet for the milder dementia, for mild to moderate dementia, is you got to be 1.5 standard deviations away from the norm. So, you know, Nadja initially qualified because the doctor didn't, you know, force him to go through the black door. The doctor just used the same test that he'd been using on you know, white former players. And the NFL, after Nadja got his award from the claims administrator, the NFL appealed that and said that the clinician, you know, messed up, that because he didn't use this race norming, that the scores were illegitimate. And they, you know, took it up on appeal, and now it's back down before the clinician. So, you know, the NFL has been, I mean, and you can understand why it would be financially beneficial to the NFL, because this is an uncapped award. I mean, there's no cap on what damages they might be able to pay. And, you know, most of the former players, most of the 20,000 people in the class are African-Americans. So by making it this much harder for African-Americans to qualify, the NFL is saving itself a bunch of money. But it's also completely hypocritical when they're, you know, wrapping themselves in the
right.
Black Lives Matter flag,
yeah,
playing the Black National Anthem before games.
Wow.
Well, one, you know, first of all, when word came down that there had been a settlement, everybody that I know in sports media was like, yes, these guys deserve some sort of settlement, some sort of payment. Not one person that I've ever talked to about this has ever brought up this discriminatory practice. And I'm just curious, do you have a dollar figure as far as what total, you know, what the ratio is? Like, what have white players been able to collect versus what black players have been able to collect?
You know, that's actually one of the things that we're trying to find out, and it's one of the things that Congress is trying to find out. Senators Booker and Wyden and Representative Waters and I forget another member of Congress wrote the NFL a letter after we filed our lawsuit asking for that information, and I think the NFL has failed to respond to that. We'd like to know, you know, just how much harder it is for black former players to qualify than it is for white former players.
And you filed
but, you
this...
Know, you're,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Your point about how people you've never heard about this. I mean, you know, I have talked to a bunch of different players, and to a person, you know, whether they're black or white or something else, none of them had any idea this. I mean, they wouldn't have voted for this. You know, this was, they have 20,000 class members, and in order for the settlement to get certified, you know, a lot of them had to accept this. I mean, there were some objectors, but there weren't a ton. And I don't think, you know, anybody, I mean, because in the locker room, you know, these guys are brothers. These guys, there's no race difference in the locker room. And
right. They're
told that, you know, you're warriors, you got each other's back out there. And then for the NFL to turn around and do this to them, you know, after they, you know, gave their blood, sweat, and tears for the NFL, it's really repugnant.
It's really something. Now, you talk about medical reporting. Are you principally talking about neuropsychologists who are providing the reports with cognitive impairment and decline?
Yeah. Yeah, for each player, they get examined by a neurologist and a neuropsychologist.
Now,
and
have
a neuropsychologist
you reviewed,
runs them through a battery. Sorry, go ahead.
Right, I was going to say, and go with that. You've obviously reviewed these reports. Do the neuropsychologists actually differentiate, or are they just reporting as doctors as we would expect them to?
Well, they do the tests, right, and they get the raw score. So, for example, Nadja's raw score was 29. And that's the score that Nadja's neuropsychologist, you know, submitted to the claims administrator, and that's why he got his award. But what most do, and what the NFL says you have to do, although now they're kind of changing their tune and they're just saying, well, it's recommended, is you take the raw score, the 29, and you change it to a T score. And their software that does it, and you basically put in, is this guy Caucasian, is this guy African American, and it spits out a number. And the number for the African Americans is very significantly higher than it would be for the Caucasians. So it shows less of a cognitive drop, and therefore it's much harder for them to qualify.
Now, did you file, you filed this lawsuit in August, is that right?
Yeah, August 25th.
Okay, and I think, unfortunately, the reason it's not getting more attention, and I'm glad that this has been brought to our attention here, I think because of COVID and are we going to have a season, are we not going to have a season, and then the season was about to start, I think because there was so much more going on, basically, with the NFL, I think this has been swept under the rug, if anybody knew about it at all. So I appreciate your bringing this to our attention, because this is heinous. This is unacceptable. And again, I'm not a scientist, but I know these guys put equal effort and their blood, sweat, and tears and their body onto the field for years and in some cases decades. And they need to be taken care of.
Thank you.
You know, I wanted to ask, just piggybacking on Deb's question, regarding the future of the lawsuit, where do you see it going? Look into your crystal ball and tell us whether or not some media attention would help straighten out what needs to happen, rather than a protracted litigation where the NFL is saving money by not paying out the benefits that they should be paying out.
You know, we don't think that this is defensible, especially in this, you know, day and age with all the attention being paid to racial justice. So we have been disappointed that, you know, when we filed this lawsuit, the NFL's response was, no, there's nothing to see here, move along. I mean, what we'd really like is the NFL to say, okay, our bad, and, you know, we're going to treat everybody equally. And we also want the players who have already been subjected to this unfairness, to this discriminatory system, to be compensated for that. You know, right now the NFL has responded. We actually filed two pleadings on August 25th. We filed an Article 27 motion within the settlement, and then we filed a civil rights action as a separate complaint. And they've responded to one last week, but they haven't responded to the other. So, you know, if the NFL insists on kind of, you know, going to the mat on this, then we'll litigate this. And, you know, we will hopefully eventually get discovery, and, you know, that will reveal, we expect, a hugely disparate impact on how much harder it is for former African-American former players than white ones.
You know, and your firm is well known for going to the mat on these kind of cases. We wish you the best of luck with it. We'll keep watching. You're tweeting at Eitan Goleman, Eitan Goleman, if people want to check it out at Zuckerman Spader, so you can get an update on this case. Eitan, I want to thank you for being with us today on Gervie's Law.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a nice evening. All right.
Bye.
Deb, so great to have you here. We only have, what, a minute and a half? Come on, Wayman. 1 minute. You got a minute.
Well, I'm honored that you had me here today. That interview was, you know, gut-shattering, basically, yeah. Because, you know, you thought these guys were going to finally get the just rewards that they deserve. Not rewards. That's completely the wrong word to use, but they were going to be taken care of.
And you know what? Eitan makes such a good point that with Black Lives Matter and everything that the NFL is doing, how can they be doing this to their own?
Right.
It seems so discriminatory and so prejudicial, making no sense when you have medical science behind you to support the settlements.
Exactly.
It's big business. Wow. Mm. Deb, thanks so much for being with us. So nice to see you, in person, and good luck with everything. It's Deb Carson, Fox News. Where can everyone hear you?
On Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, iHeartRadio, Pacific Time, 6 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. National Sports Reports during the Dan Patrick Show and The Herd with Colin Cowherd.
Colin Cowherd. For another day, we'll talk about Colin. Thanks for listening to Gervie.
This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.